Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Major Doug Rocky, retired from the military, certainly has a PhD in physics. But we're going to be talking this evening about the depleted uranium that is being used by our military. Now, it is one of the most effective weapons ever devised by men, and truly one of the most diabolical. It is, when they say depleted uranium, it means, well, it's solid uranium. They've just taken out some of the uranium-235 to put into nuclear fuel rods and to use for nuclear weapons, but the rest of it is still radioactive uranium, and there's still uranium-234 and 235 in the depleted uranium. They make it into bullets, they make it into missiles, they make it into bombs, and of course when it's fired, it catches fire, it'll burn right through the wall of a tank, it'll explode inside and destroy everything. A very effective tool. The only trouble is that the residual from the depleted uranium is a dust that can be inhaled, and of course it gets into the body of not only the enemies, but the civilians and American soldiers as well. And with that as a background, Major Rocky, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Good evening.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fine. Why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about you, those who do not know you personally.
Well, my background in the military goes back over 30 years, and served in Vietnam and Vietnam era, flying B-52s, dropping bombs for a living as an avionics technician and expert, and went back into the National Guard in 1980 and served as a combat medic in the infantry, and then all of a sudden, yay behold, I went on to teach nuclear biological chemical warfare for the military and combat medicine, and got a direct commission as a health physicist, and then during Gulf War One, I was a specifically assigned to Theater Preventive Medicine Unit, where we had the overall responsibility for hazardous materials, preventive medicine, nuclear biological chemical warfare. Completion of the ground war, General Schwarzkopf ordered me to clean up the depleted uranium mess from then. We did a lot of reports, and then in 1994 and 95 I was recalled to active duty as the director of the U.S. Army Depleted Uranium Project, during which we developed all the training and educational materials, developed the Army regulations, procedures for management and environmental cleanup and everything else, and found out that you can't safely clean up uranium munitions and you can't safely use them. And when I spoke out, the Army was not happy campers.
Well, of course, the thing is that the official policy is this is a great weapon, and it is a great weapon. And the purpose of the Army is to kill things and destroy, kill people and destroy things, and there's no better weapon. But the residual is the thing that is concerned about, and of course nobody seems to really be concerned about the effect on the health of our people, on the effect of the civilians, whether it be in Bosnia or in Kosovo where these weapons were used, or certainly in Iraq. Do we find any residual from the use of the depleted uranium weapons a decade ago, I guess what, almost 14 years ago now, during the first Gulf War?
Well, absolutely. The residuals, the destroyed equipment and buildings are still remaining throughout Iraq and in Kuwait, and we found...
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Rocky or Major Rocky, and I was asking him, what about the residual from the first Gulf War? And he was mentioning the buildings, but is there evidence of radioactivity there? What about the people? What about birth defects, things like that in the Iraqi population?
Well, yes, absolutely. The radioactive contamination that's wholesale still over throughout the whole area, especially around Basra and what we knew as the Highway of Death. That's where a major battle occurred after the completion of the ground war. So that's all there. As far as the adverse health effects are totally well documented by World Health Organization and Doctors Without Borders and all the different groups that have gone into Iraq, all the reports that have come out. We've held two world conferences in the last year. One was at the University of Hamburg in Hamburg, Germany, and then another one at the Karolinska Institute and the Swedish Parliament in Stockholm, Sweden. And again, it's thoroughly reported and documented. We also see the same adverse health effects on my staff, myself, my team. We're seeing the extensive health effects throughout the military personnel that served in Gulf War I. And now we're seeing the same effects from Operation Iraqi Freedom, the stuff in Afghanistan and the Balkans.
Well, could you talk just a little bit about what we know about the health effects on, say, for the people, you know, who were, came in contact with this 10 years ago, the people in, of course, in the Balkans as well. I mean, what about, for instance, childhood abnormalities, certainly deformed children being born? This can always happen even normally, but is it much more prevalent since they've used this radioactive material?
Well, absolutely. All of the medical reports that are coming out of Iraq, medical reports that are in and around Concord, Massachusetts, medical reports from Vieques, Puerto Rico, the Balkans.
No, for Puerto Rico, that's because, of course, they use these weapons in Puerto Rico at the gunnery range. And what about the one in New England? Is that where they manufacture these products?
Absolutely. In Concord, Massachusetts, at StarMet, they manufacture them. At the National Lead Site in Albany, New York, they manufacture them. Over here in Indiana, at Jefferson Proving Ground, they were testing them and all that other stuff. So, I mean, these are the extensive things that are happening. And birth defects are just out there. I talked to a doctor that just returned from Iraq on a special mission, and he totally documented the serious birth abnormalities in the ones now with the children. Well, we've already had confirmed exposures, confirmed high levels of uranium in American sons and daughters that went into Operation Iraqi Freedom, and children that were conceived while they were on leave or after the return have been born with birth defects.
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Major Rocky says that there's a great deal of evidence that there have been tremendous numbers of birth defects, and not only in Iraq, but here in the children, the offspring of the veterans of the first Gulf War. Now, what about the incidence of cancer in the southern part of Iraq, where, of course, the area was widely contaminated by the use of these radioactive munitions? Has the incidence of cancer actually gone up significantly?
Well, let's go back to our own team. We had the cancers developing in our team members within 9 months. That was nasopharyngeal cancer back in the back of the throat. And then the first lung cancers were within 2 years with deaths following rapidly. And they have continued to develop cancers and die up until this last year.
Now,
my staff alone.
This was the men. How many men, what you were talking about, your staff, how many were there about?
There were 400 and some individuals totally involved in, that were survive-friendly fire involved in the cleanup and the movement of all the contaminated equipment, and primarily 100 individuals. And again, we just continue to see those happening. Our own health effects started almost immediately, and they've continued to this day without let-up, and they match exactly what's been said all over, what was known back in 1943 in reports we've got from Los Alamos, New Mexico, and direct conversations we had with scientists involved in the Manhattan Project. It's very easy to document and verify what's happening, but what's most disturbing is when we get to the actual Pentagon, direct Pentagon briefings, recent Pentagon briefings, internal briefings, again, they document the potential problems and everything. For example, and I'm going to this because I want to get a direct quote, not, you understand what I mean. Here we go. This is a briefing that was prepared by U.S. Army Colonel Dr. Edward J. Edgar Wakiyama, and it was given to the leaders in the Pentagon in 2002, and what it states very specifically regarding uranium munitions. And I'm going to come on down here to the direct quote. The alpha particle taken inside the body in large doses is hazardous, producing cell damage and cancer. Lung cancer is well documented. Well, absolutely, no kidding. The beta particle is hazardous to the skin and the lens of the eye. Direct quote. We continue on. DU is chemically toxic, just like lead. The target organ is the kidney and the bone. Continuing on, direct quote, urine samples containing uranium are mutagenic as determined by the Ames test. Direct quote, the cultured human stem bone cell line with DU also transform the cells to become carcinogenic. We saw all of the respiratory problems. Those are also totally documented. Again, in our own medical reports and testing, they're documented. But while this is all happening, the members of the Department of Defense, just in the Department of VA, continually to deny any adverse health effects, even though their own documents specifically state it's going to happen. And what we've seen is that it did happen.
And what you're basically saying is when the veteran goes to the Veterans Administration to try to get help, he's told there's nothing wrong with you, there's no way you could have gotten this from depleted uranium, although they know that that's not true.
Well, that's correct. And I'm going to quote from the head of the depleted uranium program for the Baltimore VA, in charge of all this for the VA. March of 1999, 8 years after I came back, they finally allowed me to, or invited me to come up to the Baltimore DU medical program for testing. And this is a direct quote. As a courtesy, we invited you to come to Baltimore to be seen during the 1999 evaluation period, even though you did not actually fit the eligibility requirements because of your concern about your possible exposure to depleted uranium, end quote. It's an astonishing.
What did they find when they tested you?
Well, I got a 40% disability. Finally, you know, and it took a few years after that. But I think what's important to understand is I issued the initial order mandating medical care in right after completion of the ground war in 1991 as a theater health physicist. And that was followed up by the theater medical commander, D.G. Zulis, a general officer type level, issuing the direct order for medical care. And that order has been issued so many times, including General Eric Shinseki, who just retired as General of the Army, issuing the direct order in 1993, as did the Secretary of Defense on numerous occasions. And then here recently, in 2003, the Deputy Secretary of Defense in charge of all medical for the Department of Defense, Dr. Bill Winkenwerter, issued the order mandating medical care. And then what happened in April of this last year, the Surgeon General for the U.S. Army, the entire thing, the top dog, a three-star general, issued a direct order that medical care shall be provided for those exposed to depleted uranium. And that was dated 29 April of 2004, and that order itself was signed directly by Lieutenant General James B. Peek, M.D., commanding U.S. Army Medical Command.
So what's happened? In other words, despite the fact the orders are there, the men are not being cared for?
That's absolutely correct. We have probably the most famous instance, which just literally triggered a whole bunch of stuff, was the heroes of 911, the New York police and fire that were then deployed to Iraq as members of the 442nd National Guard and MP unit. And they were absolutely confirmed exposed to uranium. They are sick. Children conceived by members in that unit after they were exposed have been born with birth defects. And thousands upon thousands have been exposed, both American sons and daughters, coalition sons and daughters, and they've not received the medical care that they're due. But more important, and this is what really gets me angry, is the children, whether the children of Vieques at Concord, the children from Albany, New York, the children from any of these other locations, the children of Iraq, Afghanistan, the Balkans, they're not getting their medical care. You can't issue an order saying, thou shalt provide medical care, and then deny it to our American sons and daughters, but at the same time deny it to everybody else that you knew was exposed it's simply a crime against God and humanity.
Well, why aren't they getting it? I mean, somebody has to be intervening. Somebody has to be saying, don't carry out this order, you know, because the military is built upon discipline and orders. Who is undermining the efforts to get treatment for the veterans and for the military personnel?
Well, the two individuals who have the ultimate responsibility within the Department of Defense are Dr. William Winkenwerter and Dr. Michael Kilpatrick. They're deputy secretaries. And they know that the orders exist, and they just declined to help us ensure full compliance with the orders. So we have a real serious problem. But when we trace this all back, you're not going to have deputy secretaries doing this unless they have the authority out of the White House. Now, I can guarantee you that President Bush has full knowledge of this, just like President Bill Clinton had full knowledge of it. Vice President Cheney has full knowledge. And same thing with Deputy Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld. They just simply disregard their own directives, because what it comes down to is that they want to sustain the use of uranium munitions, because you have to understand, these are extremely effective. Absolutely no question about their combat effectiveness. But as the issue order I got in March of 1991, it was a memorandum that came from Los Alamos in March of 1991, stated, lie in your reports, make sure nobody finds out or understands the adverse health and environmental effects of the use of uranium munitions, because we won't always be able to use them.
In other words, you were told to lie and not to put down the truth, because they were quite willing to have everything based upon deception, because they wanted to be able to use this very effective weapon. And you did you violate that order? In other words, you would not lie because you felt it was immoral?
Absolutely correct, you know, and I spent years working within the system trying to get these orders complied with. We developed the procedures and the environmental guidelines that are now adopted. You have to understand, we not only have an order mandating medical care signed by the, you know, all the way up to the Secretary of Defense and the second deputy secretaries and the generals, but we also have a direct order, and that's U.S. Army Regulation 700-48, dated September of 2002, that was issued by General Eric Shinseki, mandating thorough environmental cleanup and remediation of the contaminated areas. They're not doing it.
But of course, really,
not doing it.
But literally, from a practical point of view, it really is impossible. I mean, you've got a whole city, you've got Fallujah, it must be just covered with the radioactive dust. Is there any way in the world that you could possibly clean that up? And if there's not, why are we letting the families go back in there, that the civilians and the children will be contaminated with this radioactive dust?
Well, let's look at the Highway of Death. That happened back in the end of February, early March of 1991. Although we put all the cleanup procedures together, it was never cleaned up. The people that have gone in there have climbed, have been exposed, and they've become sick, and we've seen all of the problems.
Now, for our listeners, why don't you tell them what the Highway of Death was?
I know that, but go ahead. The Highway of Death was a major battle where the escaping Iraqi troops were caught by our tanks, Abrams tanks firing DU munitions, and our A-10 Warthog aircraft firing DU munitions, and they were disseminated.
Now, basically, this was a column of vehicles trying to get out of Kuwait. And what was it? A couple of miles long, or what?
Oh, it's miles and miles long. It's a couple of miles wide.
And it's
absolutely total devastation. And it was all uranium munitions.
How many people died there?
I have no idea. The photographs. It's disturbing to even look at the photographs. You know, we've got both video and photographs of it happening and seeing it occurring.
So like a turkey shoot, wasn't it? I mean, with all those people there, and they just killed them all.
Absolutely. It was decimated. So we see this all over the place. And so you have all of these existing orders and regulations. We know you can't clean it up.
So really, the orders really don't mean much of anything. The only real solution is to stop using the depleted uranium, and the military has no intention of giving up an effective weapon just to save lives.
That's correct.
Well, it's a tragic situation, and of course, what we're going to do, is contaminate that area so it'll be unlivable, for generations yet to come.
For eternity.
Well.
Eternity.
So, you know, the tragedy is one day somebody's going to have to answer for this. There are war crimes, and there are war crimes commissions, and there are world courts.
The world court has already ruled on this. I mean, I've got the world court decision.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Major Rocky, and you were just talking about the World Court decision. Tell us about what has the World Court come up with? What is their decision on this? The use of these radioactive, truly a nuclear weapon on civilian populations.
That's correct, and that's what the World Court found. They found it illegal, that it must be cleaned up and everything else, and it's just totally disregarded. It's that simple. It's just totally disregarded. United Nations, under Karen Parker, a phenomenal lawyer, had ruled years ago that the use of uranium munitions is illegal. And it's very, very simple. It affects combatants and non-combatants. It contaminates air, water, and soil for eternity, as is specifically stated in the U.S. Army's own common task that all soldiers and all military personnel must master prior to deployment. It's that simple.
But, of course, there really is no way to master it. There's no way to protect yourself. You're in that area. You're going to be breathing at least some of this radioactive material into your lungs. It's a fine dust. It gets into the lungs. Then it's able to pass on into the bloodstream, go to the bones and the kidney, and all these target organs. And of course, it'll be there for a good deal of the rest of the life. Is there any way to chelate that or to get it out of the system at all?
Well, I'm not a physician. I mean, you're a physician. It's just like lead poisoning. If you could get rapid chelation, which is, as you know, as a physician, it's extremely dangerous, correct?
Well, it can be done, though, and certainly you want to get the heavy metals out of the individual.
But that's only for the soluble fraction. The insoluble fraction can't be chelated out.
Right.
So you have a serious problem. And what we found, and again, I have to go back very specifically, when we did all the research on this and we developed the regulations to cover this, okay, the U.S. Army regulation, U.S. Army Regulation 700-48, is very, very, very specific, okay, and I want to give some direct quotes out of this. This is U.S. Army Regulation 700-48. It's management of equipment contaminated, depleted uranium, or other radioactive commodities. You have to understand, it's not just DU alone, okay, it's extensive radioactive materials. This order was issued. Regulation is dated 16 September of 2002. It is signed by General Eric Shinseki, which made it formal and an official directive that it must be complied with. The applicability states, very quote, this regulation applies to Department of the Army commands installation activities. This includes the U.S. Army Reserve, the Army National Guard of the United States. This Army regulation remains applicable in Department Army personnel deployed to either humanitarian or peacekeeping missions where the degree of readiness to respond to hostile requires availability of radioactive commodities. It's very clear. When we get down to specifics that we put into this after we did all the research and testing, okay, you have to understand, if you use uranium munitions, even though we know it's very difficult to clean it up, you have to do something. We have to mitigate what we can. I mean, that's the simplest thing what I came up with and put all this stuff together. So the direct quote is, the commander's radiation safety officer will identify, segregate, isolate, secure, and label all radioactive contaminated equipment. Procedures to minimize spread of radioactivity will be implemented as soon as possible. Because this is combat, you have chock full of unexploded ordnance, which means explosives that go boom, just breathing on them or looking wrong. And it states, quote, explosive ordnance disposal units will render equipment safe prior to retrograde operations when appropriate. We come on down again to
hold that thought, because we're going to bring some stations right on right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Major Rocky, and of course he's a physicist, a health physicist, retired now from the military, but of course still you actually could be called back at any time, couldn't you?
Yeah, I seriously doubt if they'd want me.
Because you're not very popular, because you've been trying to say how dangerous this this radioactive material is.
Well, all I'm trying to do is get them to comply with their own requirements.
Well,
it's simple. Sure. In other words, orders were issued stating thou shalt provide medical care. And I've been working for years to make sure that everybody that's been exposed, not just a handful of people that they've given care to, get the medical care that they've earned or that's due. And then making sure all the environmental contamination is cleaned up according to the regulation. Now, again, I'll give a direct quote from the regulation. All equipment, to include captured or combat radiologically contaminated equipment, will be surveyed, packaged, retrograded, decontaminated, and released in accordance with the U.S. Army Technical Bulletin 9-1300-278, the pamphlet 700-48, and other relevant guidance. It's very, very clear that it needs to be done. And when we go on down again, another direct quote from the regulation, radioactive material and waste will not be locally disposed of through burial, submersion, incineration, destruction in place, or abandonment.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do with it? If you don't bury it, and you certainly can't take it out and dump it in the middle of the ocean, can you?
Well, what we did during Gulf War One is I sent 24 vehicles back to the United States. That was 15 Abrams tanks and 9 Bradley fighting vehicles that had been shot up during friendly fire and contaminated depleted uranium. And it took over 3 years at a multi-million dollar facility, the only facility of its kind, to properly decontaminate and ready those vehicles for disposal, or in some cases to, repair them and put them back into use.
Well, were we ever actually able to get any of those back in use? And get them safe enough to use?
They were put back into use. Now, safe enough to use, that's a real good question. You know, again, depends on how all the other factors. But we have to understand, what I try to do, and my staff and other people I work with, we tried like mad to stop the use of uranium munitions. Back in April 16th of 1999, we were called up to the Presidential Oversight Board. That was chaired by Senator Warren Rudman and also by the famed Admiral Elmo Zumwalt. And we met with the White House staff and the Department of Defense staff, and we said, guys, you can't use uranium munitions in the Balkans. You can't use it, where we got it planned to happen in Iraq again with Operation Iraqi Freedom, which you have to understand was totally ready to go and planned back in the 90s, okay? And then the same thing in Afghanistan.
But you're basically saying the Iraq War was planned long before 9/11.
Well, General Zinni from the U.S. Marine Corps totally acknowledged that last May in a 60 Minutes interview.
Right.
I mean, let's go to reality here. And so they just said, we don't care. We're going to use it. And it's totally confirmed use. Now, we've had the World Health Organization, we've had the United Nations specifically ask the United States very specifically to clean it all up, okay, and clean up the mess and provide medical care. And they just totally disregard it.
Well, this is not certainly going to sit very well with the rest of the world. And my fear is that the attitude, this arrogance on the part of our Defense Department is going to antagonize all the rest of the world and really alienate the people of the rest of the world when they realize that we're endangering their lives and the lives of their children.
Well, absolutely, and it already has done that. But you have to understand, it's not just the rest of the world. It's Vieques, Puerto Rico. It's Albany, New York. It's Concord, Massachusetts. It's Jefferson Proving Ground, Indiana. It's all over the place. At Hunter's Point out in California. And what was most astonishing, United States Representative Jim McDermott totally confirmed, we have the total documents, that the U.S. Navy and the Coast Guard was firing it in Puget Sound.
Well, now, what about Hunter's Point? Because that's not too far from where I am. Was that simply because they were loading it on in the ships? Doesn't it have to actually be fired before it becomes dangerous?
Yeah, they were doing the testing and everything else, but then they were also firing. You'd have to speak to the scientists that are working it out there. Loren Murray has been working on, Dr. Marion Falk, some of the other ones in that region that are, experts in this. But again, it's documented. What we have is deliberate, willful use of uranium munitions, knowing they have serious adverse health effects because they're extremely effective in combat, with the utter disregard for signed orders mandating medical care and an utter disregard for U.S. Army regulations mandating thorough environmental cleanup of all contamination.
Because I'm more worried about the total disregard for human health and for the health of generations yet unborn.
And I am also. I totally agree with you, Dr. Scan, because you and I have lived a full life, and we've had it, but these children that are come in the future, they don't deserve this.
I know. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. When we get back, we will welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. The people can go, of course, to the Trap Rock Peace website. That's a Quaker website, isn't it, Major?
That is correct. www.traprockpeace, traprockpeace.org. And then they can literally download all of these orders and regulations. They can download the medical reports from Iraq and all over the Balkans and from the U.S. They can download and see it for themselves.
And, of course, these international meetings that have been held, I actually went to the Royal Institute of Medicine over in London when I first heard about this. I wanted to make sure this was a very real problem. And here are certainly independent physicians from a very, very prestigious organization were expressing their concern about the use of depleted uranium. So this is not imaginary. This is very real. And, of course, the tragedy is, things do come back. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if our people, if our military is contaminating Iraq and certainly the Middle East, why should we complain if other countries were to use the same type of terrible, terrible weapon here on the United States, on the American people, contaminating our land throughout eternity?
But our own troops are doing that. Our military is doing that to ourselves. We have to come down to the very fundamental. Does any individual, does any nation have the right to deliberately and willfully contaminate air, water, and soil, which will make it totally unusable as specified in the U.S. Army's own documents for eternity? I can't think of any place in the United States and anybody that lives here that would say, okay, you can take and throw 5 pounds, much less thousands of tons of solid radioactive materials in your churchyard, schoolyard, or in your backyard, and allow the Department of Defense or the U.S. government to refuse to clean up the contamination or provide medical care. That's the fundamental thing. This is simply wrong. It is simply wrong.
Well, I don't think there's any question it's simply wrong. The question is what can be done about it. First of all, I know you're working your heart out, so we've done a number of programs on it. And incidentally, for our listeners, we have a great new 4-tape set on depleted uranium where you'll actually hear Major Rocky and others talking about this. And hold just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Rocky, or Major Doug Rocky. Dr. Rocky has his Ph.D. in physics.
Let's get it real straight. I got my Ph.D. in physics and technology education, but I've been a physicist for many years. Hands-on practical guy.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Major Rocky, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this is really such an important issue. Now, has anybody tried to get this into the courts and try to get our courts in this country to do something, at least as far as the contamination in this country?
Yes, we've attempted to do that, and we've been stymied. In several instances where it's been stopped cold. So you have to understand, it's just stopped cold. It's simple. The U.S. Army regulations specify, again, the maximum allowable contamination exposures. And this is based on contamination levels in what everybody knows as, you know, a radiation exposure. When we go to the technical bulletin, it very specifically states the maximum fixed alpha contamination can be no greater than 200 counts per minute for personnel, clothing, etc. And the removal can be zero. Now, what we found from our first-hand research and doing this and working with this stuff, blowing things up, burning things, plus real combat, it, we're in the tens of thousands and millions of counts per minute. And it also states very specifically the maximum beta and gamma exposure can be 0.05 millirad per hour, okay, at 2.5 centimeters. And we were measuring up in the ballpark of 300 millirad per hour.
What about our boys, you know, who went into Fallujah, and of course they were fighting in the streets there. Do we have any idea what exposure they must have had? Because certainly we were using artillery, we were using bombing. I mean, there must have been, you know, depleted uranium every place there.
Well, you not only just have the uranium contamination, you have all the other radioactive materials, you have all the other hats and materials that were used and destroyed and released during this thing. So when we go to look at the actual medical data, okay, that already has been verified by the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, okay, that gives us a real clear picture of what we're seeing already. And so now I'm going to go to the actual medical data, medical reports from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. For Operation Iraqi Freedom itself, okay, and that's about 160,000 troops that participated. As of August of last year, and now this has been, we've got more current one, but I'm going to go to where I have the full formal report. As of August, end of August, September of last year, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs had already awarded permanent disability to 27,571 individuals. And in less than 1 year, we had 153 cases, confirmed cases of malignant neoplasms. That's cancers. 473 cases of benign. And then we go thousands upon thousands of cases of respiratory, circulatory, digestive, GI problems, rashes, everything under the sun.
Now, this is basically related to the attack there in 2002?
This is all related to the what had happened on our military operations within Iraq, starting when we started the invasion. So yeah, it's
and these figures
within
actually
1 year, we're looking at, you know, we're looking at right now at over 20% of the force that's participated in Operation Iraqi Freedom has already been labeled permanently disabled by the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. That's an astonishing number. You don't have young kids come down with these serious health problems. It doesn't statistically, epidemiologically, it doesn't make any sense, especially when we're seeing this now. And this mirrors with what we have seen from Gulf War One. When we look at the medical statistics, disability ratings from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, for those individuals that participated in the active combat phase of Gulf War One, that is from August of 1990 through the fall of 1991, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has already awarded permanent disability to over 180,000 of our nation's sons and daughters. And when we look at everybody that has gone and served in the Persian Gulf from, and this is where I have the full formal report, from August of 1990 through May of 2004, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs had awarded permanent disability to over 257,854 of our nation's sons and daughters.
257,000 now have a disability. That's August of 1990 until May of 2004. That's an awful lot of people who are very ill.
30% of the force has now already been permanently disabled. And so they wonder today, why are they having to call up the reserve of the National Guard? Why are they having to go to the IRR? And what showed up in the Army Times, it came a couple of days ago, they're actually seriously considering recalling retirees.
Well, let's go to Roger, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. Do you have a question for Major Rocky?
Yes, thank you. Dr. Major Doug, I would like to ask you to expand some on your surprising to me at the time and therefore all the more damning answer to my question of a couple weeks back. And if you leave anything out, if you could leave me on to in a response. And that is when I had asked you if you could confirm my surmise that there might be, say, as little as 1 to 5% of any vehicles, reactive armor, anything that would even occasion the use for the reactive armor. You said there was very little, or I believe you said zero occasion for the use of these arms. And then you said they had preferred to use them for the destructive potential, and it would be understandable that the average troop himself would prefer those rounds. And so could you expand in the manner of, might that lead to, say, slightly higher front side losses of because of a little more hand-to-hand fighting versus 10 or 100 times more slow, lingering death losses down the line?
Well, what's your point, Roger?
Well, I hope that was conveyed to...
Did you understand what Roger was saying?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
One of the reasons and justification for this is the fact that when we can stand off at 3,000 meters and blow them apart, okay, that's wide-open desert fighting tank to tank. You have to understand, in Operation Iraqi Freedom, the A-10s came in there and firing the rounds at 4,000 round a minute, strafing apartment buildings and all kinds of buildings. We're not just armor to armor at 3,000 meters. We're in the cities where we're blowing things apart at a few hundred meters. Okay? Now, yes, in direct combat, That's the reason why they want to sustain the use of this weapon. It gives us an advantage that's beyond comprehension as far as destroying buildings, as far as destroying any type of vehicle. It doesn't have to be just armor. Now, however, the problem is, and this is where it all comes down to it, after the fact, the contamination is so great if you get in there, and this is why the military specifically states, thou shalt wear respiratory and skin protection. That's in the specific doctrine. Well, you can't have our soldiers wearing respiratory and skin protection for eternity when they're in the area, and you sure didn't issue it to any of the civilians in the area. So when you look at combat, the reason they want to keep it is because it is so fantastic and it does give us such a tremendous advantage. But the consequences of the use are devastating, and that's what we've seen.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Roger.
What would be the, say, the consequence of more frontside losses or requirement to use a more total amount of ammo, et cetera, to, if not achieve the same effect, sufficient military...
What you're saying, what would be if we use traditional ammunition rather than...
What would be the losses or the relative disadvantage to doing that?
Again, we'd have to go back into the planning cycles, and we have very specific doctrine and procedures for planning the casualties based on attacks and what we're going against. And that's just not based on the type of ammo. That's based on the fortifications, type of enemy that you're going against and everything else. And so there's a lot more to this. But as far as, you know, would there be any big difference between using conventional munitions versus all this? No. There wouldn't. You know, we're still going to look at the same casualty rates, and we're looking at the other things, because this is not necessarily a function. This is not wide open terrain where our tanks are standing back at 3,000 meters out of range of them. We're at 100 meters. And when we start using the 50 cal round, you know, which we lost an Abrams tank to a 50 cal friendly fire in August, that's ridiculous. It's just simply ridiculous. That's the justification for the military keeping use it. Say it gives us such an advantage, we won't give it up and totally disregard what happens to anybody or health or environment.
And I think that's really what's so unconscionable, because, of course, we're not only damaging the enemy, we're damaging civilians, we're damaging generations yet unborn, and then we're damaging our own troops.
But again, is there really an enemy? I mean, the justification for Operation Iraqi Freedom, which was planned in the 1990s, as President Bush had admit, no, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Well, we knew there weren't, and that was well documented. Scott Ritter, Hans Blix, Richard Butler, everybody that was involved had stated that. So the President and all of them knew before they launched this attack, Iraq had no offensive capability to threaten anything in the United States. And so, I mean, when you look at the real justification, and then we come down to it, the 911 Commission, and everybody said, yeah, there was no night connection between 911 and Iraq. Well, everybody knew that because the battle was all planned to happen long before any of that even occurred.
So again,
you have to come down, what right do we have to invade another nation, totally contaminate it with uranium munitions, blow everything up, whether it be in a tank or an armor, which, yeah, when they're in combat, you've got a justification to shoot them, but there's no reason for shooting up apartment buildings and water treatment facilities and schools, which is thoroughly, totally documented, both in video and in scientific measurements and by the government's own reports.
Wrong. Well, I would not in any way disagree with anything you've said. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call to Major Rocky, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we're really talking about the use of depleted uranium as a weapon. And then, of course, if we get a little bit further into this, of course, the implications of why we are really in Iraq. Some people say, oh, well, we're far better off fighting the terrorists on the streets of Baghdad rather than the streets of New York. And, well, I would just simply say, how many terrorists have there been on the streets of New York? Our borders are open. The terrorists could come in any time by plane, by boat, by speedboat, by submarine. They could simply walk across the border, either the northern border or the southern border. And we don't have any terrorists. In fact, we have not had a terrorist attack in America in over 3 years. Maybe this whole thing is not at all what it appears to be. Well, certainly Major Rocky's done a tremendous job of accumulating information. He's on the front lines. of trying to get this information out across America. Major, as you talk to people across America, and I know you do a lot of certainly radio interviews and talk, do you think the American people are realizing the implications of what we're doing? Because this appears to me to be, a crime against humanity, every bit as terrible as some of the things that the Nazis did in their concentration camps. At least they did not contaminate the occupied areas for eternity.
Well, it depends on where you are. Again, if you're working with people that are knowledgeable and concerned, you have different groups. Obviously, you work with the military personnel. They want to have the most effective weapon that's possible. Okay, and I understand that, and that's where I was at for years and years and years. But at the same time, make it real simple. If you ask the warrior to charge the machine gun nest, and he's wounded, you must provide him medical care. And that's simply not happening. The United States General Accounting Office and the congressional investigations verified the Department of Defense did not provide the soldiers that were deployed to any of these combat actions the pre-deployment health physical assessment that was mandated by law. The General Accounting Office, congressional investigations have absolutely verified that upon return, the soldiers did not get the post-deployment health physical assessment that was mandated by law. But more important, it's been totally documented that they didn't receive the medical care that they earned and they should receive. So when we look from the warrior's point of view, whether it's uranium munitions or anything that's happened, we've abandoned the warrior. Look at the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs reports. It's thoroughly documented that the average appointment takes 6 months. And once you do get in, it's a joke.
I know, and they do nothing. Well, let's get to Jack here for calling from Michigan. Hi, Jack. Did you have a question or comment?
Well, both. In Junior Luciferian's inaugural speech, he stated, "There's still an angel in the whirlwind directing the storm." Subsequent to that, he made the statement, "This is the new crusade." Dr. Stan and others have obviously described a provocative act in disclosing the video at that prison and all those atrocities. I think there's a... You mentioned the PNAC.
But you're way off the subject. We're talking about depleted uranium.
Right, right. Well, what I'm leading up to here is I believe there is this ultimate agenda to decimate the returning military personnel so that they would be incapable of resisting an internal war.
All right, fine, thanks. Let's get Major Rocky. Of course, Matt is suggesting that that they may be actually allowing these things to happen. It doesn't make any sense. He's suggesting maybe there are some wicked people who are actually intentionally allowing this to happen. What would your take be on that?
I don't think so.
All right, fine. Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Indianapolis. Hi, Tim.
Oh, hi, guys. Just a couple of comments. I feel so distraught when I listen to this. You have these saboteurs, Bush and Cheney and the Pentagon. What an appropriate name for a satanic building. I mean, it's one big murdering pool. My question regarding the depleted uranium, should our troops, the troops that are returning, I see them kissing and hugging, should they be quarantined? Major Iraqi? No, hang on, listen.
No. I mean, what you have to do is you have to clean their equipment, clean the clothing, but if they've been bathed and everything, they're not going to have a problem. Now, one thing that we have to look at is we have to provide the actual testing to determine whether or not they had any uranium exposure, internalized uranium. And if they did, then we have to find out, as we found out in the Gulf War I friendly fire, if they were passing any uranium via the semen. But what's more important on this has been documented because of the uranium, internalized uranium. We're seeing damage to the chromosomes, XY chromosomes, we're looking damage to the DNA, and as a consequence, we have the birth effects. But at the same time with all this, we see tremendous health effects because of the damage at the cellular level and the damage within the body as far as the individual.
And I
so
think that that's
a nightmare.
This you mentioned earlier the mutagenic effect, and that's what you were talking about. And certainly, we know that radioactivity really can change the genetic makeup. And of course, you change the genetic makeup of a child. Why? Of course, you get a deformed child, or just it's really sort of a nightmare situation. We're going to be back here in just a moment with a Major Rocky, and then we'll wrap up the program for this evening. And again, I think this is such a vitally important subject. The website to go to would be www.traprockpeace.org. That's traprockpeace.org. I've been there myself. Pull down some of those articles. Find out if this is true. I believe it is. I believe we need to get the information out. I believe America is under attack from another point of view today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Major Doug Rocky, and we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the rest of the program. What is the message you would like to leave with our listeners out across America tonight?
Well, just before I get ready to fall asleep.
I know, and I appreciate your willingness to stay up, because I know it's pretty late back where you are.
Yeah, the key thing is the Department of Defense has regulations and orders that mandate medical care for America's sons and daughters that were exposed to contaminants of war, including very specifically depleted uranium. The Department of Defense has regulations that state very clearly thou shalt clean up all the environmental contamination. Our sons and daughters must be provided all that medical care. All the contamination must be cleaned up. But we cannot deny medical care to the sons and daughters of all other nations that were exposed, and the sons and daughters of all of the cities and communities in our country where they were exposed, at the same time that we say it must be provided to America's warriors, but it's denied. That's simply wrong. And the other thing, too, is very simply, we have to clean up all the environmental contamination of war, because the uranium munitions absolutely must be cleaned up by U.S. Army regulation, and the Department of Defense personnel continue to refuse to do it. I've asked the individuals that had responsibility that I work with to support this. They refuse to do this at the Pentagon today. And then the other thing, too, is we need to remember today, and this is where I've taken the stance and I made the change. I have to understand, I came into the military in 1967, and I'm retired now, and this is, what, 2005? But you can recall that any time, even though I'm way over 50. The thing to understand is today, the technology that we use in war and the destruction of the nations with the infrastructure that they have results in toxic results and damage, health and environmental effects that we can no longer provide medical care for and we can no longer clean up. It's real simple. I personally and professionally think war has become obsolete, and we better figure out other ways to settle these disputes, because the future of the world and the future generations, the children of the world, their life, the well-being of all of them depends on what we do today and how we respond to what we have done in the past.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I think war, if you study the history of wars, you realize how futile it usually is. And wars, I think, are often fought for far different reasons than the men we ask to go overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die are ever allowed to know.
You know, I have to make it understand, if I have a threat against my nation, I'm going to pull up. You know, it's like during Gulf War One. I actually went to the theater chief of staff and volunteered to go fly a B-52 mission and drop the nukes. Well, I did that, but again, you have to look at where is the line drawn. Okay, well, when we have to defend our nation, I'm going to be there first and foremost.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We're out of time. Good night.
God bless. Good night, sir.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course I think this is a very, very important issue, which is why we keep coming back, and certainly Major Rocky is one of the most articulate spokesmen trying to get this information out. And I don't know if you could sense this evening, but almost a feeling of frustration of, you know, trying to get the information out, trying to make people care. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you need to get the information. Go to that website, TRAP, Rock, Peace, traprockpeace.org. We have a great 4-tape set on depleted uranium. We put it together specifically to give you the information on this subject. We want you to get that information. We believe we even have a We talked to Colonel Drakovich, as I remember, and we certainly Doug Rocky and Lorraine Murray. The information is there. We just need you to help us get it out. And, of course, America is under attack from so many points of view today. Those of you who listen to our programs regularly know about my concern about the fact that we're attacking the minds of our children with fluoride, with mercury that they put in the vaccines, and now in the influenza vaccine because they've taken it out of the childhood vaccines, that they really want you to get the shots for your children with of influenza, knowing full well that the toxic doses of mercury there that in adults will produce Alzheimer's disease. And what do you think it does to children? And then, of course, the aspartame, which is in so many of the drinks. All of these things are neurotoxic and attack the minds of our children. And then we wonder why our academic achievement scores are so low, that our children, comparing them with children throughout the rest of the world, our children, high school graduates, can't compete. This isn't happening by accident. You go into China and the areas where they have high doses of levels of fluoride in the water, there are no geniuses at all. And we're not turning out geniuses today either. So if you really want to get more information, well, you can go to my website, radioliberty.com. You can, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, the December newsletter. It's just coming off the press right now. And it really contains Dr. William Hersey's testimony before a Senate committee, testimony that was totally blocked out by the controlled media in America. If you don't believe the media is controlled, you need to get the book we carry called The New Media Elite. If you want more information on fluoride, why the book, The Fluoride Deception, or the book by Dr. Blalock, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And, of course, you certainly will want to get the four-tape set on fluoride and then an update on fluoride that we're putting out. If you want to know about aspartame, we have a four-tape set on that. We carry Dr. Blalock's book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And, of course, it's also covered in his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, which we strongly recommend. And then if you want to know about mercury, why we have a video called Uninformed Consent. And then, of course, we have four-tape set. And incidentally, we do have an excellent video called Sweet Misery. It goes into the background of aspartame. All of this information is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, you need to get these four tape sets and listen to them and go to the websites and pull that material down and put it into a syllabus and help us get the information out. Because you are the people who are going to make a difference. I can only talk to so many people. I can't talk much more than 5 hours a day on the radio as I do. But you've got to help us get that information out. Get people listening to our programs. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, listen to our Internet programs. You can hear us on shortwave 4 hours a day. Get other people listening. Copy the four-tape sets we have, the videos, anything we produced, you have our permission to copy. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle. And that so, until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Madeline Cosman, who's certainly one of my favorite guests, and I think she'll be yours as well. She's a lawyer, but she's a good lawyer. She's on our side. She actually teaches, taught in medical school. She's an expert in health law. Her email is Medlawn, it looks like. Is that Medlaw or Medlawn?
It is not, Dr. Stan. Hello, hello.
How are you?
I'm well indeed. It's a pleasure to be working with you.
I know. This evening we were going to talk, I believe, about the health implications of immigration, and then I think the next time we're going to be together, we were going to talk about the new health type of accounts. But
right.
This
Absolutely.
Evening we were going to talk about the health implications of immigration. I don't think that the average individual really understands about the immigration. Most people say, well, that's somebody else's problem, or yes, there are a lot of people coming in here, but they're nice people, and they're looking for jobs, and a lot of them are nice people. A lot of them would like to have a better life, but unfortunately, a nation that can't guard its own borders is no longer a sovereign nation. And when you have people coming in here, draining off expenses as far as the health expenses and the welfare expenses, and then bringing in other diseases. At that point, you see each and every one of us is on the front lines of this battle. So, Dr. Cosman, why don't you go ahead and just pick up the story from there?
With great pleasure. We have a border with Mexico, Dr. Stan, which is about 2,000 miles long. About 10,000 illegal aliens cross that border every day. And that means that about 4,000 actually become permanent residents of the United States. It's about 3 million annually. And we don't know how many illegal aliens there are in the United States at the moment. Some people will say 9 or 12 million. My own guess is that it's closer to 20 million. And that's because I've been studying for the past several years the effect of illegal aliens on American medicine. And I've discovered some absolutely horrifying things. For example, here in California, we had between 1993 and 2003, so in just 10 years, we had 60 hospitals closed. Why? They essentially degenerated the emergency rooms, which had been really essentially high-tech trauma centers, suddenly degenerated into local medical offices treating illegal aliens who did not pay. And no business, even a charitable business such as a hospital, can endure if approximately 50% of its patients pay zero but cost huge amounts of money.
I agree with you totally, but now the thing is that my understanding is that really the health care cost for, even for Los Angeles, is astronomical. The majority of children born at the Los Angeles County Hospital are born to people who are in this country illegally, and this is basically, in many respects, destroying the health care delivery system of the states that border Mexico. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Madeline Cosman. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Dr. Madeline Cosman. You pick up the story from there, please.
With pleasure. I was saying that because of the requirement that hospitals have to treat illegal aliens for free, and there's a technical term for the law, it's called EMTALA, that's the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, which requires that any hospital emergency room treat for free anyone who comes in until that person is stabilized, either for discharge or transfer. So any illegal alien who comes in with essentially any problem that can be construed as an emergency must be treated. So,
but even more frightening is the hospital cannot report that person who is here illegally to the police or to the immigration service. All they can do is take care of them, and then they go out and they remain here illegally. In fact, everything is being done to block efforts to get rid of illegal aliens.
You're absolutely correct. In the first decade that I had studied, 1993 to 2003, 60 hospitals closed, but in the 1 year thereafter, in 2004, another 24 hospitals. So I can document 84 hospitals just in California, and that doesn't include, obviously, the other hospitals throughout the nation that are closing because they're going bankrupt, or at least certain portions, such as the emergency rooms, are going bankrupt because of the need to treat the illegal aliens. And you mentioned the babies born in the hospital. Many of us who are working in this field now refer to these babies as anchor babies, because pregnant women drop their little anchors, and then these little anchor babies draw the illegal alien mother and father and siblings into permanent residency in the U.S., because these little anchor babies instantly become citizens of the United States and of the state they're born in, and they instantly become liable and eligible for welfare benefits. To give you an example, there's a family called the Silverios, which were on the first page of the Wall Street Journal in 2003. I also had a chance to study these delightful people who, however, are exploiting America in a stunning way. The father and mother, Cristobal and Felipa, came here in 1997 and came with three children, 19, 12, and 8. As soon as...
Hold that thought just a moment. Well, our guest this evening is Dr. Madeline Cosman, and she's talking about a family that came to this country some years ago with three children, the oldest of whom was 19. They were here legally. They live here in California. Where are they? Someplace up around Stockton? Whereabouts?
That is exactly correct. They're in Stockton.
All right, you go ahead and tell this amazing, amazing story.
The three children came with their parents. The mother, who was essentially a mother of the bride of the 19-year-old, the mother suddenly popped out a new daughter, an anchor baby named Floor, who was born premature, spent 3 months in the neonatal incubator of San Joaquin Hospital, costing that hospital $300,000, reimbursed.
Not reimbursed, right.
Illegal alien 19-year-old daughter and her new illegal alien husband made their own anchor baby, and then Grandma Felipa, not to be outdone, made a second anchor baby named Christian. So the two anchor babies suddenly were, that is, the mama and papa with their two anchor babies, suddenly had two little citizens who were qualified for very generous welfare benefits, namely $1,000 per month. And a sick or disabled anchor baby is more valuable to the illegal alien than a well anchor baby. So that in that particular family, mother and father, as fruit pickers in Stockton, earned $18,000 a year, but the anchor babies earned $12,000 a year because they were anchor babies, so the whole family earned $30,000, paying no taxes, getting all benefits, and all welfare benefits free.
And, of course, the thing is that the only explanation for this is this country is crazy. You cannot do this sort of thing. There's no country in the world you can go into illegally and begin to get benefits and welfare benefits and free medical care and free education. I mean, why would we do something like this? Well, I believe that there's an agenda behind it myself. I believe that there are people who want to bankrupt our country. I believe there are people who want to destroy our sovereignty. I believe there are people who want to tear down our borders and unite us, not only with Mexico, but with the other countries of the Northern Hemisphere, and raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Bolivian peasant. There is no other logical explanation. There are organizations for illegal aliens that are funded by the Ford Foundation and that are funded by government agencies, and people at the highest echelons of our government are doing everything possible to prevent efforts to stop this this deluge of immigrants from south of the border. And with that as the background, please pick up this story, Madeline.
Certainly. Some of these organizations that are supposedly promoting the civil rights of the illegal aliens are stunningly powerful, and you're absolutely correct. It's Ford Foundation, Carnegie Foundation, George Soros money behind them. So any time one cares to try to deport an illegal alien, and I've been doing some work recently on violent sexual predators who are illegal aliens. Well, in order to deport these people who are criminals and who are endangering children, who are pedophiles, who are rapists of five-year-old girls, these despicable, horrible, vicious people cannot be deported, because there are organizations that, in fact, want to keep them here and work to keep them here.
So that organization like LULAC and MALDAY, my understanding,
exactly.
That Alberto Gonzalez was formerly a member of LULAC. He may still be, for all I know.
Well, Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, the Open Society Institute, that's George Soros money, Southern Poverty Law Center. I recently did some work in which I noted that the National Immigration Law Center, which is another promoter of open borders and illegal aliens, quote, rights, unquote, was very upset when, in the 1996 Labor Reform Act, the monies given in supplemental security, Social Security and food stamps were diminished for all people on welfare throughout the nation. But the illegal aliens suddenly were able to get back what the government had taken from everyone else, because National Immigration Law Center was able to restore, as they proudly relate in their documents, $12 billion in supplemental security income to illegal and legal aliens, and $800 billion in food stamps. Now, that is just absolutely astonishing. So that the illegal aliens were getting more in welfare than our own indigent citizens.
Sometimes I think we live in a country gone mad, and other times I'm absolutely certain we live in a country gone mad. Go ahead.
Well, I actually don't believe that the country has gone mad. I believe that something more sinister is occurring.
Oh, I agree with you totally. There has to be a logical explanation. What is your impression of what's going on?
Well, one, American people are generous, they're gracious, and they're charitable. And people who have got a despicable agenda are exploiting this decency and goodness on the part of Americans. And the despicable agenda is to essentially destroy our sovereignty, to essentially eliminate all borders, to essentially create one world and basically one socialist world that does not honor integrity, does not honor sovereignty, does not honor excellence. And I fear this is becoming more and more attractive to more and more Americans. And I don't believe that we can stop talking and stop alerting Americans to the impending crisis. And the crisis is best described by our shrug, our unwillingness to acknowledge what is happening on our borders.
I think you're absolutely right, and you hit the nail right on the head. There is an agenda behind what's going on. We're really not crazy. The other side knows exactly what they're doing. My only complaint is the good people, are just not doing anything, and when the good people don't take a stand, why the evil people triumph. For as someone once said, the price the good people pay for their apathy and indifference to public affairs is that they are ruled and controlled by evil men, and I believe that is happening today.
I agree. However, I think that we're now coming to a point where certain evidence is going to be so difficult to ignore that Americans will wake up and they'll recognize that you and I and people like us who are trying to call them to alarmed alert, that we are correct. For example, very few people are aware that diseases that we had once as a nation completely vanquished, infectious diseases that we had completely eliminated from our hospitals and from our populace are now suddenly coming back. In fact, there are other diseases that only occurred in the poverty-stricken parts of the third world that now are suddenly endemic here in the United States. For example, there's a new strain of tuberculosis. Tuberculosis had completely disappeared because we had such good hygiene, because there were such marvelous drugs such as isoniazid and rifampin. Suddenly, it's increased in America, and it's a new type of tuberculosis, multiple drug-resistant TB, which is in essence a time bomb. Illegal aliens are bringing TB, this new multiple drug-resistant TB, into America so that in Virginia, in Michigan, in Minnesota, in Florida, in Maine, there are sudden outbreaks in schools, in police stations, in unexpected outlandish places. Why? Because the people who are Americans are teaching the illegal alien children, therefore in the schools, the men and women who are attempting to arrest the illegal aliens in the police stations are contracting the diseases from the illegal aliens themselves. And the tuberculosis is only one of several diseases that suddenly is having a comeback. For example, who ever thought of leprosy in the United States? It was so rare that in 40 years we had maybe 900 cases in America.
In fact, we pretty well closed down the leprosarium there.
Well, now, in the past 3 years, we have 7,000 cases. It's astonishing. All brought in by immigrants from India, Brazil, the Caribbean, Mexico.
And, of course, the average American is not being told this because the last thing the people who control the media want is a concerned American public. And I hate to say this, but sometimes the only way you can get people to buy life insurance is to convince them they're going to die. The only way you can get the American public concerned is to make them realize that what is happening is going to have an impact upon them and their children. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Madeline Kosman. We'll welcome your calls. At 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Madeline Cosman. We're talking about the health implications of the massive immigration that is taking place today, with millions of people coming into this country and staying here every year. Dr. Cosman estimates 3 million new illegal aliens every year, and many of these are carrying diseases. She's already talked about the resistant types of tuberculosis, drug-resistant tuberculosis. She's talking about leprosy, and I can remember, of course, when I was a medical student, I think I saw one or two cases of leprosy in all the years of my medical practice. But today, leprosy is on the rise in America because it's being allowed intensely to come in. People coming in legally could not come into this country with leprosy. They would be prevented from coming in. But when they can come in illegally and be financed by our government and get welfare and get subsidized education and subsidized college education and certainly all of the other benefits, in many instances better benefits than people who are born here and paying taxes, why we've got a real problem. So please pick up the story from there.
Certainly. I'm quite sure, Dr. Stan, that when you were starting out in medicine, you never came across Chagas disease or dengue fever, because these are things that almost never occurred in America. However, we now have Chagas disease, which has the revolting nickname of kissing bug disease, and that's because the protozoan favors the lips and the mouth for infection. In any event, in Latin America, 18 million people every year are infected, and about 50,000 of them die, and there's no effective cure. Well, suddenly, Chagas disease is being discovered in our blood supply and in organ transplants, so that in 2001, and this was reported in the New York Times, 3 Chagas-infected transplants were used for transplanting kidneys, and 2 patients who received these infected organs died.
But, of course, the thing is, because they don't anticipate there'd be Chagas here, they don't test for Chagas. The thing is that this would sort of be like, testing to find out if a person, when they came to the emergency room, was really an alien from outer space. And you're not going to see that, so you wouldn't even consider that as a possibility. And as a physician, and I'm sure the people, I wouldn't think of it, as people working the blood bank wouldn't think of it, people transferring organs wouldn't think of it, but now, of course, it is a factor. Simply because we've allowed people to come in with that. You talk about dengue disease. I can remember it was June 15th, 1981, when the first cases of AIDS were reported. But, of course, the important issue in that issue of the MMWR was the fact that there were 4 cases of dengue in the United States. 4 cases of dengue fever, so unusual that it was reported in the MMWR put out by the CDC. And yet, of course, now dengue is coming back in America simply because we are allowing this invasion. And that's really what it is, isn't it?
You're absolutely correct. In fact, there was a recent outbreak of dengue fever on the Texas-Mexico border, and there is a strain of dengue. Dengue ordinarily is not fatal, but dengue hemorrhagic fever routinely kills. And suddenly, here it is in Texas of the USA.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're back here. Our guest this evening, Dr. Madeline Cosman. And right now, we've got Arlene calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Arlene. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, yes. I'd like to ask a question of the doctor. Two questions.
Go right ahead.
Last year, I nearly died of a bacterial infection, which took... 2 weeks, 4 or 3, before they identified any antibiotic that they could treat it with, and also had to do exploratory surgery to find out where it was. And I wondered if the doctor has heard any more about bacterial infections. I've also heard from a friend that in New York, apparently, there's been some bacterial type infection that some of the soldiers are bringing back from Iraq, and as I say, I nearly died from this. My kidneys nearly shut down, and I'm looking at dialysis here pretty soon. And so I am wondering if the doctor has heard any more. And I have a friend whose mother, who was in her mid-80s, and she had other health problems, that died from a bacterial infection in her bladder.
Now, because Arlene, what sort of an organism was it? Was it a staphylococcus, a streptococcus, was it an E. coli? What was the organism, do you know?
I have no idea. No one has told me. I have asked, and I asked my doctor, and apparently the specialist that was called in to identify it or to treat it and find out and take blood cultures and so on, I have never found out.
Was that Dr. Dietz, who's the infectious?
Yes. Yeah, he's the specialist.
He's a very, very good specialist.
He's very good.
And I have the greatest respect for him. Well, Dr. Cosman, have you heard anything about the routine bacteria, which we've always been able to handle here? I mean, I can think of only, you know, most of the time I was in medicine, only very, very rarely did we find somebody that we couldn't treat with routine antibiotics. But in recent years, actually since I've retired from medicine, one of my closest friends, a doctor who I worked with very, very closely, who helped me, assisted me on literally hundreds of cases, and we'd been close for 25 or 30 years, and he died of an uncontrollable bacterial infection. Is this becoming increasingly a problem in America?
Unfortunately, yes. And I think that I would not want to try any curbside diagnosis, Arlene, of your problem. But what is true is that there are some very rare bacteria and very rare viruses that are just coming into the country. But further, there are some very ordinary bacteria and viruses that we had thought we had already overcome, which are now suddenly reappearing and reemerging. So that there's polio, there is malaria, there is West Nile, there is Kawasaki's disease. There's a whole range of things which we knew about and thought we had overcome, but they're coming back. And then there are these rare and exotic diseases that are appearing that we actually cannot at the moment adequately control. And this is absolutely horrendous. There's a particular nasty microorganism called Vibrio vulnificus, which is related to cholera, and it's becoming more and more frequent because there are particular people who enjoy eating raw oysters, and this Vibrio inhabits the raw or infects certain oysters and shellfish and also warm salt water, and therefore suddenly people are developing these horrendous drug-resistant and flesh-destroying infections because of Vibrio vulnificus. Whoever thought of this otherwise?
Well, I don't know what this was, but I had completely broken down. I couldn't walk. I before I went into the hospital, everything was starting to just completely deteriorate.
Well, this may have nothing to do with the illegal aliens, but then again, maybe it does.
Anyway, thank you so much for calling, Arlene, okay. And I'm glad at least they got you through that. And,
oh, yeah.
And Dr. Dietz is an excellent, excellent interest. God bless you, and thank you for calling.
Alrighty, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and we're, of course, when we get back here, why, we'll once again invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, as you listen to our programs regularly, we always encourage you to think about trying to find other means to increase your resistance to a disease, as well as taking the traditional antibiotics. Traditional antibiotics are wonderful, but you also want to be able to know how to stimulate your immune response, because your health is really many times up to you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Madeline Cosman, and she's just talking about these diseases that we thought were not really a problem anymore. And certainly the return of drug-resistant tuberculosis and of leprosy and of dengue and of Shocker's disease and all of these things that Dr. Cosman is talking about, these are all going to impact upon you. The return of malaria. Malaria has simply almost entirely disappeared from the United States. But now, of course, people come in, they have malaria, they're bitten by a mosquito, and that mosquito then can carry the malaria to you. We've got real problems in America, and this is all because these people are coming in, they're coming in illegally, they're not being examined ahead of time to make sure that they're not carrying diseases. When we had an effective public health approach, which we no longer really have, but when we had an effective public health approach, we could isolate ourselves from the diseases that were plaguing other people. It would appear that our leaders are really not concerned about the health of the American people. So pick up the story from there, please.
In the old days, Dr. Stan, anyone who wanted to come into America legally had to be able to demonstrate that he had no communicable diseases and was not a drug addict. And in fact, until 1924, everyone who came in off a boat needed to be examined. And I know that my own grandfather, who came through Ellis Island, would always tell the story that the first thing he did instantly upon coming to America was to bow down and kiss the concrete of America, thanking God he was here. But the second thing he did was to strip naked, and the third thing was to cough hard, because every legal immigrant was examined for TB and any infectious disease. In fact, now anyone who wants a green card must also prove by examination that he's got nothing which is going to be an infectious disease that could be communicated to others, and is free of drug addiction. But anyone who crosses the border illegally, of course, is not going to be examined, and of course is not going to be known to be carrying, as if a Trojan horse, a deadly disease that could ultimately destroy not only the person carrying it, but anyone who comes into contact with that person. So Americans are at terrible risk of a type of destruction from...
Hold that thought there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Madeline Cosman. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, I know in 30 years ago, when people came into the United States and got a green card, they had to promise they would never go on welfare. In other words, they were not to come to America to begin getting welfare benefits. They were to come here to work. But that's no longer the case. You can come in legally now, and you can go right on to welfare. In fact, everything is being done to encourage people to come in and take advantage of the hospitality of this country. And we cannot survive as a free society if we continue doing that. We're seeing what's happening in Germany today, as they're having to dramatically cut back on their benefits and their pensions for everybody there. And it's just beginning. I mean, Germany, there's no way that they can afford the utopian society they have. They have a 10% unemployment. If you're not working, you get full benefits. And, of course, you get health benefits and you get pension benefits. But now the good old days in Europe are gone, and Germany's beginning to cut back on the benefits. There are demonstrations, there are riots on the streets. But the government has no alternative. And here in the United States, our government is going to have no alternative. It's one thing to take care of our own people, but to offer people coming into this country legally all sorts of welfare benefits, it flies in the face of sanity. And now, of course, we welcome people coming here illegally, And, of course, they are taking full advantage of those benefits as well. So pick up the story there, Dr. Cosman. Have you looked at all into the resurgence of whooping cough and the epidemics of whooping cough that are breaking out, even in areas where everybody is vaccinated, but those areas right along, of course, the southern border, where, of course, people are coming in and bringing pertussis, whooping cough with them?
You are absolutely correct, and, of course, the reason is that the illegal immigrants are not being vaccinated, so therefore they are bringing in the diseases from their home countries, and we don't know about it until there's a sudden outbreak, not only among those children, but our American citizen children who are in the same classes with the illegal aliens. And one of the things that is so astonishing is that the schools are not allowed to report illegal aliens, just as the hospitals are not allowed to report, just as, in fact, the local police are not allowed to report the illegal aliens to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the ICE, which takes the place of the old INS.
And I think that is really, I think that is so, it's a blatant thing. The police are not allowed to report illegal aliens to the immigration people. The hospitals are not allowed. The schools are not allowed. You see, the whole thing is to protect not the citizens of this country, but people who come here illegally, who are violating our laws. And, of course, I think Dr. Cosman is absolutely right. This is part of a much larger agenda. And until people recognize that agenda, until they understand that there really are people in key positions in Washington, D.C., who have no loyalty to America, but their loyalty is to this globalist dream, the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Economy, the New World Currency. So why don't you pick up the story from there, Dr. Cosman?
There's yet something else happening that I was not fully aware of until I was actually lecturing just 2 months or 3 months ago in Iowa and in Illinois. And on my way on the airplane, I happened to be sitting next to a very pleasant gentleman who indicated that he was an agent with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and he was part of Operation Predator.
Predator.
Predator. I had never heard of it. Well, it turns out that what he does is to target the illegal aliens who are sexual predators against children. I was thoroughly astonished to realize that our Department of Homeland Security is devoting its largest investigative arm, namely Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to a special group dedicated to eliminating the illegal aliens from America who happen to be sexual predators. And this man was not based in, say, California or Texas or Arizona, one of the border states, but he was based in, if you please, Des Moines, Iowa. And he described the most revolting and heartrending cases of illegal aliens who had raped and sodomized children, both girls and boys. And then he gave me a paper, which was a group of ICE, Operation Predator, press releases. And in towns, in states where you would never assume there was a major problem with illegal aliens to begin with, there's a major problem with illegal aliens who are sexual predators. And this, again, has a connection to medicine because, alas, these poor victims, these little children, or for that matter, adults, come into the emergency rooms who are the victims of illegal aliens. So we have yet another indication as to how the American medical circumstance is affected by illegal aliens, let alone the sexual and physical integrity of Americans violated, because illegal aliens who come through our unpatrolled borders are frequently hiding the horrors of sexual predation.
Well, now, of course, if they're arrested, I'm sure we don't just send them back to Mexico. We probably have to put them in prison here, and then we have to pay for their upkeep for many, many years.
That's correct.
And, of course, this is simply another drain on the whole economics of our system. We have over 2 million people in prison in the United States today. Over 2 million people in prison, and a significant number of those, my understanding is, well over 500,000 are illegal aliens. Can you verify or challenge that? Do you have any information on the expense of our prison system, of our criminal justice system, and the illegal aliens?
It is an absolutely overpowering expense. I have heard various statistics, and it may be as high as 30%, at least in certain states. It may be as high as 30% of our prison population is illegal aliens. If you just look at, say, Los Angeles, in terms of the number of warrants outstanding for murder, for felony, I believe 95% of the outstanding homicide warrants in Los Angeles are for illegal aliens.
Well, my producer just put up on the screen the figure 700,000. I'd heard of 650,000. I'm not going to quibble over 50,000, but it is a significant part of the criminal problem we have in this country, and it is being actively encouraged by those wicked people in Washington, D.C., who are wedded to this concept of globalism and the breaking down of the borders of our society. So these things are not happening by accident. They're happening by intent.
They are happening by intent, but not everyone who believes that illegal aliens are good is actually wicked. There are many who believe that the illegal aliens are actually doing jobs that Americans won't do, or they're actually good, generous, gracious people who want to develop their families and who want the American dream.
Well, it says some of them are good people, but of course we can't take every good person in the world because it will bankrupt America. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, some of them are hardworking, some of them are here to simply sponge off the system and take advantage of it. In fact, the way the system has been set up, they would be foolish not to take advantage of it. In fact, I'm amazed that any of them want to work. Some of them will, and they're very, very hard workers. But then some of them are criminals, and some of them are sick, both mentally and physically. And this is why you have to have border controls. No nation can maintain its sovereignty and, of course, have open borders. And a nation that can't guard its own borders is not a sovereign nation.
Precisely. And a nation which does not honor itself will never be honored by others.
Well said. Well, can you think of any other health problems that we face today directly related to the this flood, this deluge of illegal immigrants that are besieging our country?
I was unaware until recently as to what effect the illegal aliens had upon our drug problem here in America. And apparently there are Mexican groups in particular that are dedicated entirely to the making, the smuggling, and the distributing of methamphetamines. And I had mentioned that I was in Iowa. I then had a chance to talk about drugs with a man who was from the DEA, and apparently there's a huge amount of methamphetamine trafficking in Iowa. Again, who would have thought that right there in the heartland there would be huge problems? But according to this DEA agent to whom I had spoken, 80% of all drug investigations now are traceable to methamphetamine, and most of this comes from Mexican-controlled criminal organizations. And many of the Midwestern towns have their local Mexican-American population, and therefore illegal aliens who are smuggling illegal drugs have safe houses and safe places. And according to the DEA, and you can actually check this on their own website, a single pound of methamphetamine from California, which costs here in California $5,000, sells for enormous meteoric profit in Iowa for $16,000. So the drug traffickers have a huge amount of money to protect. They're stunningly well armed, and they therefore are contributing not only to the corruption of essentially lower middle class white adults, but they're also contributing hugely to the criminal justice system, because people on methamphetamines become violent and have delusions. And furthermore, the drug dealers, who are the illegal aliens themselves, are very violent creatures who want to be sure that no one gets in on their profit, and therefore there are drive-by shootings, there are assaults and all sorts of violent acts that are absolutely definitively traceable back to the illegal aliens.
And of course, so many of them will get then into the gangs, and then the gangs, of course, get involved in drugs, and then they have their turf wars. And yes, we're seeing this increasingly, even in the area where I'm living, certainly in the next county over in Salinas. Why, of course, they have the drive-by shootings, but now they're spreading into the Watsonville area. And we're going to see more and more and more of these problems unless the American people are going to take a stand. And the tragedy is there is no leadership out there. The leadership of both political parties is committed to globalism, is committed to allowing illegal immigration, and both John Kerry and George Bush are intent upon allowing this continued deluge of the illegal immigrants. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you agree, if you disagree, we'd love to hear from you. Our guest this evening, Dr. Madeline Cosman, we're talking about the tragic effect of the fact that we have people in Washington, D.C., who honestly are dedicated to not stopping illegal immigration. Now, I certainly know that many of our corporations are benefiting from this. Certainly many of the contractors will hire illegal immigrants to, and they'll do jobs, you know, and work, you know, $6, $8, $10 an hour, and maybe get people who are American corporations, they're getting $15, $20 an hour with benefits. A lot of the illegal immigrants will work without benefits. Americans demand benefits. You can see why, of course, people many times will leave, will actually utilize people who will come and work for less and do a good job. But, of course, this is all undercutting the very fabric of our society.
What is also true is that the people who are employing the illegal aliens are not taking into consideration that they're ultimately paying a huge amount more than they're actually paying in salary, because they're going to be taxed in order to pay for the free care that the illegal aliens are getting in terms of education and medicine, and very often in the criminal justice system.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that people really begin to understand the implications of what's going on here, and of course get involved. There are organizations that we work very closely with, certainly Glenn Spencer in Southern California and Barbara Cole, and there are people who are totally dedicated to trying to dramatize this to make people understand that if we don't protect America, why nobody else will, because the government is not going to do what's logical. Can you imagine when the police are prevented from notifying the immigration service when they pick up somebody who's here in America illegally? Well, it just doesn't make sense unless you understand that Dr. Cosman is actually actively, absolutely right. There is another agenda. So, you know, what can we do, Dr. Cosman, to try to remedy the situation? What are your suggestions, and what are you telling people as you speak to them out across America?
There are several things that we must do, but it's going to take great courage, and it's going to take an ability to cherish what we have. Namely, we must close and police the borders. and we must ultimately deport illegal aliens. That sounds cruel, that sounds difficult, but we must do it. Second, we must rescind the citizenship of the anchor babies who are born here to illegal alien parents. Third, we have to recognize that if aiding and abetting illegal aliens is a crime, we must punish it. And finally, we must grant no new amnesty.
And I believe it, agree with every one of those points that you're saying. I think this idea that President Bush has embraced, that, you know, well, this will be the last time we're going to give as many people as want to green cards, but then, of course, they can bring in their relatives and friends, and it's only a matter of time before they become citizens of this country, and that is what it's really all about. They're not telling you, but do you know a better way to destroy this nation than to allow a third of, or a half of Mexico to come in here as legal aliens? We'll be right back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Dr. Madeline Cosman, and there really are people who would like to raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Mexican peasant. And basically, this is exactly what is being taken place today. As step by step, little by little, why the American people are gradually being impoverished. And you haven't seen anything yet. I really fear that within this next year or two, there's going to be a dramatic drop in living standards. And everybody's going to say how it happened. Well, it happened because the good people did nothing. Dr. Cosman, we've got about 2.5 minutes. Would you like to wrap up the program for this evening?
With pleasure. We must determine as Americans that we either love America and we're willing to protect it, or we really don't care about America and we want to become citizens of the world, which of course means citizens of a global socialism. I would never elect that, and I would prefer to fight against the unreason and fight against the illegal aliens who are exploiting and ultimately helping to destroy our medical system, our welfare system, and ultimately our criminal justice system. Therefore, we must elect those who are going to close and police the borders. We must protest when we hear that even our beloved president wants to grant an amnesty, even though he is calling it worker guest or guest worker program. We must protest this vocally, and we must protest this in every way we are able to do it. And if we are at that point where we recognize that we cannot get what we need by ordinary complaint, then we must contemplate whether there is a way to do yet something else more strenuously, and I would never want to assume that we must have a revolution, but we may be coming to the point where either we are going to be overrun or we must take the steps to prevent our borders from being the welcome wagons that currently they are to every illegal alien who wants to come in. We must decide who should be allowed in, and we must allow in only those who ultimately will lead to the increase in excellence, the increase in logic.
Hold that thought right there.
Increase in productivity.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cosman was saying the only people we can allow in are those that are allowed increase in excellence and productivity, and I agree with everything she said. It's been a pleasure to have you with us this evening. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Radio Liberty, and of course we'll look forward to having you on one of our other programs the next week or so.
Wonderful, and thank you, Dr. Stan, for your remarkable labors for liberty.
God bless you. Bye. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye. All right, fine. That was Dr. Madeline Cosman. That certainly speaks very, very clear, very forcefully, and very well. She grasps what this is about. But remember, the enemy is not the illegal alien. I mean, if I was living as in Mexico under the circumstances, I would want to come to America. The enemy are the people in Washington, D.C., in the Ford Foundation, in the Carnegie Foundation, these people of great wealth, who, of course, are traitors to our way of life, whose loyalty is, of course, to the New World Order and the New World Religion, because these people, of course, dream a different dream. They march to a different drumbeat. They worship a different God. And it is only when we understand the spiritual forces that are energizing what's going on that we can really understand what's taking place. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get the book. It's inexpensive, easy to read, and of course will give you tremendous insight into what's really going on in the world today. And then certainly let me point out that if you have not yet seen Megiddo 1, which put out by our good friend Chris Pinto, it's a 2.25-hour, very, very professionally done video that gives you an overview of prophecy, biblical prophecy. It can be used as certainly to instruct people in a prophecy class, but of course it's much more extensive than that because it goes into the prophecies by Nostradamus, the prophecies by Edgar Cayce. Then of course these were false prophets. They were all basically tied into the occult, and then of course kicks into World War I and World War II, and now our involvement in World War III. And then of course Megiddo 2, we certainly recommend, and incidentally both Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2 are both available in both video and in DVD. And when you get into Megiddo 2, you'll actually give the history from the time of creation right up to the present time, and talking about the occult forces at work. And actually I appear in Megiddo 2, where we talk about Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who wrote The Secret Doctrine, which is the Mein Kampf. In fact, it actually energized Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, and Margaret Sanger, and Arthur Conan Doyle, and Thomas Edison, and Robert Mueller, and so many of the occultists, of course, who dominate our society today. So that's Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. We recommend, of course, the videos. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions. You need to get this. You need to show it to your children and your grandchildren so they will get a grasp of the satanic movement which dominates America today. Because Satanism is not only in music, but in every aspect of our life. Until we understand that there is a supernatural, there is witchcraft, there are Satanists, there are secret societies, not one but many of them, which all interlock into what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. So if you'd like to get the information, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You need to get the 4 tape sets we have, whether it would be the new one on Operation Paperclip or on Depleted Uranium, or the new 4 tape sets we have on fluoride, and we're going to be putting a no tape set out on 911, what really happened with an interview with Paul Thompson, 2-hour interview with him, and the 2-hour interview with Jimmy Walters. There's so much information out there you need to get. You need to help us get it out. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, our website, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for our provision and for our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.